Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Wednesday afternoon on 720 WGN. Speaking of Wintrust, apparently they are announcing today that they've bought the naming rights to the new DePaul Stadium on the near south side. We'll talk to Danny Ecker from Crane Chicago Business about that. How much money do you expect to spend on the holidays? Wallet Hub did a study, and their number for us is, I think it's about $578. That's what they, $577. That's how much they think you are going to spend, or we are going to spend per person in Chicago on the holidays. So we'll kick that around as well. But first, Wednesday is when we talk to Terry Savage. And one of the nice things about talking to Terry is not only does she know a lot about personal finance, she also is at the meetings and at the events that matter. She's at the CME Global Financial Leadership Conference in Florida this week. So she joins us by a phone line. Terry, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Good to be with you. It's been an incredible couple of days of great speakers and stimulating conversations about the markets, right. The economy, the world.
Okay, I know that, but you're in Florida in November, so what hole are you on?
I walked off the 13th hole to do this. I think I can make it back to finish the scramble.
We'll try to be quick.
That's the savage truth.
How you hitting them, okay?
Yeah, actually, after not having done it for a while, yeah.
Okay, so you were on with us maybe last week, I think it was, and we talked about this hack for people who want, private companies who wanted to buy insurance but save costs or things like that. We got a big response to that. Have you noticed that as well?
Steve, I was overwhelmed with comments. What I was talking about is if you work for a small company, one or two employees, actually only one required, that you are stuck with this year's Obamacare deals, which are pretty lousy in terms of prices and of hospitals and physicians they cover and so forth. There's a little quirk in the Affordable Care Act that allows any small business, even if only one employee takes you up on this plan, to buy the best health care plan, and the employee can pay for it pre-tax. The whole column that you triggered is now up at terrysavage.com along with some resources to find an insurance broker to get this for you. The key is you have to act now. It's a short period, November 15th to December 15th. If you have a small business, if your boss says, I'm not paying insurance for all you people, no, the boss doesn't have to pay. If as long as one employee pays, you can get a great insurance plan. So please read the column at terrysavage.com. And your name's on the front page of my website in the Q&A because I received so many questions. I heard you on Steve Bertrand. When are you going to post the column? I did it over the weekend.
Excellent. So check that out, terrysavage.com. We've got that. The election now is a week away or a week behind us. And, you know, people were talking about this 4 and 5 or 10% drop in the stock market and all of that. Instead, the Dow was setting records last week. We're down a little bit today. Have we survived the election? Have we seen what we're going to see out of the election when it comes to the stock market?
Well, we haven't seen what we're going to see out of the election when it comes to the economy. But more people have said to me, explain this. Is the market saying it likes Donald Trump?
Right.
And the answer is that's not what it's saying. What the market is saying is a couple of things. Take a look at the drug sector. Hillary Clinton was going to have price controls. She's not there now. The drug stocks, the pharmaceuticals went up. The infrastructure stocks, Donald Trump says he's going to really do that, build the bridges, the roads, and fix everything. So you get Caterpillar and the heavy industrials and the pipeline, you know, the people that make pipes. Those companies went up. And the financial sector, which has been, believe me, I'm in favor of the fiduciary rule, and I want consumers to be safe. But the banks and the financial industry has been so overwhelmed with regulation and the cost of it, much of it coming out of Washington, I must tell you, really busy work and nonsensical. So the banks and the financial sector soared with the idea that perhaps the Trump administration would be more sensible. That was enough to move the market. Plus, there's, as we always say, tons of money around. And the rest of the world, it looks like not in great shape. But it's not, the market is not endorsing Trump or rejoicing in his election. It's just saying maybe we'll get some more, some better economics for business. Not to mention tax cuts.
Yeah, I had a conversation this morning with a good friend of mine who's in the financial advising business, and we were talking about the fiduciary rule. And he is in sort of the establishment of it. And so while he says he acts as a fiduciary, he doesn't like it, and he talks about all of these different things that his company has done to protect themselves, which they say actually ends up hurting investors, even though the fiduciary rule is set up to help it. And it just struck me, like, it's almost like the reaction, the corporate reaction to the rule is causing more trouble than the rule might be creating benefit for, for people. Does that make any sense?
You know, I'm a free market person.
I mean, it's almost like
a free market person. No. I'll tell you something. I was on the fiduciary committee. If you got the emails and the posts that I get at terrysavage.com of people who have been ripped off, I talked to somebody last night from, I mean, his voicemail was so poignant that I stopped and said, no, call first thing in the morning and tell him you are not moving your account. You are not paying these fees. People get ripped off, and the people that are getting most ripped off are those with 401ks and IRAs who are now rolling them over as they leave and retire.
I guess my point, though,
army of salespeople trying to rip them off.
My point, Terry, but my point, Terry, is that these big advisors' offices are reacting in a way to protect themselves to where they're actually making it worse. Like they're overreacting to the rule.
Because Steve, that leaves an opening for people like me to sit on your radio show where I don't get paid ever, you know, I don't sell anything ever, and say, look, these guys have to fully disclose their fees and their commissions, and now they have to put your interest first. So now that they have to think about you, they don't want your business, go to Fidelity, go to Vanguard, go to T. Rowe Price, where you'll get low cost, excellent products, and reasonably good advice for diversification. You don't have to beat the market. Just be the market. They'll do the rollover for you. This is going to save retirees and people rolling over their 401ks into IRAs a fortune in fees and give them a chance at a decent retirement.
Okay, we got to go, but is it going to survive?
I was speaking to someone from Washington last night. I can't remember who that said this to me and said, you know, this is a Department of Labor regulation now. It was tested in the courts. It's scheduled to go into effect April 1st. It will survive at least for April 1st. And then, of course, there'll be efforts by the financial services industry to get this reduced or chip away at it. I usually do, you know, come out, as I said, for less regulation, free markets, for economic growth. But this is one case where I'm going to stand up and say, wait a minute. If you can't afford to make a living off people by fully disclosing your fees and commissions and thinking about them before your trip to Tahiti, then you shouldn't be in the business. And that's what I hope will the fiduciary rule will continue and survive this next go-round of attacks.
Okay, now all golfing jokes aside, I know you're busy down there, and I appreciate you taking time to join us today.
Thank you, Steve. Always good to be with you.
We'll see you next week. That's Terry Savage in Florida today. It's 12:24. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, late this morning, I got an alert in my mailbox that Danny Ecker from Crane Chicago Business had gotten the jump on yet another story when it comes to do with sports and business in this town. And he joins us now on a phone line to talk about it. Danny, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
Did I say Business Lunch? I meant the Wintrust Business Lunch. And that's what we're that's what we're talking about right here. Wintrust sponsors this program. They sponsor a lot of things, a lot of Cubs sponsorship in the city. And now they're stepping into the new DePaul Arena on the south side. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is sort of Wintrust strikes again, as you mentioned. I mean, they have one of the biggest sponsorship deals with the Cubs. They are partners with the White Sox. They're the title sponsor of the Mackinac. You know, they did it in a big Olympics thing, and now adding on to it, probably one of their biggest deals, the naming rights to the new 10,000-seat arena that's going up next to McCormick Place.
And what's in it for them?
Well, you know, I think for them, this is part of their larger, you know, for Wintrust, it's part of their larger move to raise their profile in Chicago, you know, and they're using sports marketing as a vehicle to do that, basically just trying to, you know, establish themselves as we are Chicago's hometown bank, and that's kind of what that's their line they keep talking about, and that's really what they're trying to do is kind of leverage all these different touch points in sports to make people realize that, hey, we're a big deal here in Chicago, and indeed they are. They're, you know, only second only to Northern Trust here as far as locally headquartered banks.
I know when you in the story you wrote about, you discussed the fact that the company that was looking to sell the naming rights, I think Legends it's called, or that's part of the name. They said that they thought there'd be 500,000, half a million people in this in the stadium each year. You're laughing because that'd be a lot of DePaul games, a lot of DePaul games.
Yeah, and it's, you know, this is probably going to be roughly, they're expecting probably half DePaul events, you know, men's and women's basketball and commencement, things like
that. And DePaul's drawing like, what, 2,400 fans a game?
Yeah, that's the thing that I think, you know, we're hoping people and the city really considered when they decided to build this was that, you know, it appeared as if they were going on the paid attendance figures. If you look at paid attendance at DePaul games the last few years, it was, you know, somewhere around 6,500, 7,000 a game. But the actual number of people showing up to games is about, you know, 2,400, less than that in some cases.
Well, all of that sets up my question, though, Danny. Where's the value? It's because I always thought it really wasn't butts in the seats for these sponsorship, these naming rights. It's more about scores on the TV station or in the radio or things like that, where you refer to, you know, as Wintrust Arena over and over.
Absolutely, and that is a huge part of it. And that's why, you know, I'm sure Wintrust is counting on DePaul really but not only, you know, doing better on the court, but drawing more fans, getting more attention, because, you know, the more attention DePaul can have, you know, from their program, the better off Wintrust will be here. But,
Well, I was going to say, we don't know what the dollar value is, but all this money goes to DePaul, right, not to McPeer?
DePaul. Right. That was part of this deal was, you know, DePaul and McPeer are splitting the costs, $164 million split down the middle in terms of construction. The city had to pay a bit more to actually acquire the land, quite a bit more. But, this is something that was part of the deal. They said, DePaul, you get to keep the naming rights revenue and some game day sponsorships, and then McPeer gets things like parking and some other signage, other sponsorship things for their own events. But, this is a McPeer-owned building, and DePaul is certainly going to come away with a lot of revenue from it. But, the extent to which we'll find out based on how the team does, really.
You got the jump on it late this morning. The announcement's coming this afternoon yet?
Yeah, we'll hear more. Hopefully around 1:30 they're going to have an event down there. Hopefully we'll know a bit more about what else, Wintrust gets out of this. You obviously, they get the naming rights, but the question still remains about, you know, do they get other assets involved with this, use of the building, things like that, because sometimes a lot of these top naming rights partner deals are much more complex than just putting your logo on the building.
Danny Eckerd writes for Crane Chicago Business. Thanks very much for joining us today, Danny. I appreciate it.
Sure thing.
We'll talk again soon. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WG. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 12:37 in the afternoon. All right, so how much are you going to spend on the holidays this year? Wallet Hub has been going over the numbers, and they've got some figures for us. Jill Gonzalez is an analyst with Wallet Hub, and she joins us now on a phone line. Jill, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me back, Steve.
You bet. It's good to talk to you again. I have to start by saying, I said earlier you were going to be on, and I talked about holiday spending, and I've already gotten a text from someone wanting to know why I didn't say Christmas. And come on, it's the holiday season. Several holidays we're talking about. I just get the feeling this person's been waiting for 11 months to get angry again. But we're talking about Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, all of that, the holiday season, and the numbers you've come up with are $935.58, the average across the country, and that's up more than $100 from last year. Does that speak to our confidence?
It does. You know, consumer confidence has been on the rise for a few years now, especially since employment has reached its full status. Wages are starting to increase again. So we're seeing people that are really ready to spend, I think in 2016 more than ever, especially this month. So, yeah, we are seeing an increase overall of around almost 5%.
I think there's $80 billion in additional debt coming with all of this, so maybe not so much responsibility.
Exactly. So it's one thing about consumer confidence, and it's another to say that we might be a little too confident. You know, that's all just in credit card debt alone. That's not even the mortgage, student loan, auto loan debt that we've been racking up. So that really is a huge number. If you are spending, try to spend what you have. Avoid putting it all on that credit card without paying it off too soon.
Okay, so the budget figure for Illinois, I said nationally it's 938. Illinois is, I would say, fairly low at 577. I want to get to that in a minute, but let's go to the top. Palo Alto, California. You know, probably not a big surprise. The budget there, a little over $2,800. Okay, I'll give you that. The next four, the next five, so four of the top six are towns in Texas: League City, Sugar Land, Sunnyvale, Pearland, and Missouri City, Texas. Those are four of the top six when it comes to spending will be there. I looked them up on the map. They're all suburbs of Houston. Maybe I want to move to Houston, Jill.
If you want a lot of presents, yeah. No, we saw that these are, one, all suburbs of Houston. And a lot of times suburbs of bigger cities do a lot better here. We're seeing higher monthly incomes, which is where this budget is derived from. In Texas, especially, lower monthly expenses. So you're making a lot of money. You're getting a lot of bang for your buck. And therefore, you have a lot in savings. You have a little bit more to go with your holiday budget.
Good. So I learned a little bit about Texas geography, too, because I hadn't heard of all those towns. Let's come back north where the taxes are higher. In Illinois, in Chicago, the average $577. What can we take from that number? What does it tell us about ourselves?
Well, that ranked out of about 570 cities that we looked at, that ranked 321st. So just misses being above average, still a healthy holiday budget. I mean, we have some cities on the bottom of the list that unfortunately don't even make it to the $100 level. So just breaking this down, in Chicago, monthly income on average is right around $5,000. That is on the higher side for this list. Monthly expenses, right around average. Age level is around 34 on average. So once you hit 40 or 40 and above, that's when you really get the smaller debt-to-income ratio, higher savings, and therefore a higher holiday budget. And we just do see bigger cities like this have younger populations and haven't reached that higher monthly income and lower expenses yet.
So the income is higher, the giving isn't as high, but that's because we're younger, not because we're cheaper.
Exactly.
I'll
so this
take
is
that.
Just what people Yeah, this is what people can afford to take on, not necessarily what they will take on.
Okay, speaking of cheap and sales and holiday breaks and all of that, you know, we're coming up on the big Black Friday and then Small Business Saturday and Cyber Monday. And, you know, as we get more and more labels for this shopping, I think they all become less and less meaningful. Good Friday. Black Friday shopping isn't nearly what it used to be. That's my impression. Am I right about that?
You are right. We're kind of seeing a Black November here, kind of go into December as well, people shopping the week before Christmas even. So I think online shopping really has expanded what a Black Friday is, especially through places like Amazon.com that are releasing new items every day now.
But as part of that, I know you looked at different retailers and tried to find, if you could, sort of qualify who would be offering better deals than others. And you've got Macy's at the top of the list. Explain that for me.
Macy's is at the top. Last year it was JCPenney. This year Macy's beat them out. Their average discount is around 63% off. So that last year we saw it more like 70% off was the highest. So we're seeing a little less as far as the discounts go, but still certainly lucrative, especially more so at those big box retailers. Macy's, Penny's is still very good. Kohl's up there as well.
Yeah, I was looking at the top 10 list, and we've got in this area Macy's, Penny's, Kohl's, Sears as well is number 10. Gordman's, I don't know if there's still Gordman's in the area or not. There used to be. How do you figure out, do you ask the stores what their prices are going to be? Because I know it varies when it comes to toys or books or clothes or things like that.
Yeah, we actually looked at over 8,000 deals from 35 of the biggest U.S. retailers.
But Jill, are they telling you in advance what they're going to charge on Black Friday?
They send us their ad scans in advance.
Okay. And you looked it over, and so it looks like, unfortunately, if you want to give books, there's not such a price break there, right? The break is biggest when it comes to toys and then maybe clothes.
Well, the break is big when it comes to actually books, movies, music, things that retailers know are not going to stay popular for long. Apparel certainly is big here. Toys certainly have the fairest share of discounts, but when you actually look at the discount price, it's actually the worst because they're such a popular item.
Oh,
so although there are a lot of deals to be had, not necessarily the most lucrative.
And tell me why the figure 39% is relevant.
This year we saw the average discount across all of those 35 big retailers we looked at was 39%. Last year it was 40%. Not a huge difference.
So if you see something that's 25% off, that you're probably not taking advantage of Black Friday like you should. You should look for that 39% level.
Exactly. That should be the threshold that you look for.
Also, looking at your list of retailers and their discounts, way down on the list, well, at 25.4% is Costco. You know, a lot of people think they're going to Costco for great deals, and maybe that speaks to the fact that they are getting good deals year-round, so the markdown for the holidays isn't so great.
You're exactly right. Costco, Sam's Club, as well, as around that 25% mark. Because they offer deals year-round, you're not getting a big break on Black Friday. You're better else going elsewhere.
Okay, Jill Gonzalez, you're going to be in the stores on Friday, or are you going to be at your keyboard?
I think a little bit of both. I'll probably be doing some keyboarding while I'm in a store.
That's the way to do it. Jill Gonzalez from Wallet Hub. Thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, you got the house for sale. Maybe they all talk about curb appeal. The house has got to look nice when people drive by and they see the sign in the yard. But what about the kitchen? What if it's in 1960s olive or harvest gold is what I'm thinking of, but there's that olive color too. I think I had some of that in my past life. Brian Baldoff is here from VHT Studios. He's been with us before talking about using technology to help sell your home. Brian, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hello, Steve. Thanks. Good to be back.
Okay, so when I heard about this, I mean, it's only logical, but it's also a little magical. You guys have a technology, and you work with homes and realtors and things where you can... well, essentially redecorate the inside of a house.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's no better way to show what the home currently looks like than professional photography. But if you want to show what the home could look like, we can virtually stage it, virtually repaint it, or virtually redecorate it.
So when you go in, and we've talked before about taking professional photos to sell a house, when you go into a house or a condo to sell them, and I mean, there's only so much you can do with a picture, right?
Right.
And here you're really recreating a world.
Sure. We're taking those photographs and working with the real estate professional to show buyers what the possibilities are, what the potential of the home is.
So could you clean my son's room with a picture?
I think we could. I haven't seen your son's room, but we've cleaned up some pretty messy rooms.
So I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but the idea is you go into a home and say that it's got dated carpeting or it's got dingy walls. You're right, you can re-carpet and you can repaint with a picture.
Right. In the picture, we can show the room multiple ways. So say the living room's got some old, outdated wallpaper or something. And the real estate professional says, you know, I want to show this with gray walls or light blue walls, or I want to show it with modern furniture or contemporary furniture. You could show it five or six different ways.
I'm talking about the walls and the carpeting, but then you can add furniture, right? You can take furniture out. You can take the magazine cover off the end table if you want to.
Yep. If there's personal belongings in the photograph, we can remove them. This all started with empty rooms when there was a lot of foreclosures. We would put in furniture into the photograph so people could get a sense of what it would look like. But a lot of agents said, boy, you know, this home would sell faster or for more money, or I could get more people looking if it wasn't for this outdated furniture or wall coverings. Can you help?
I'm just thinking, so is it... I want to use the word deceptive, but by saying it's not deceptive, because really it's enhancing a potential buyer's sort of experience of what they're going to look at, right? When they walk into a lousy looking house on the inside, that's not fair to them. So why not get an impression of what it looks like, what it could be at its best?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it helps everybody. The seller, you know, who needs to sell quickly or doesn't have a lot of cash on hand, they're not in a position to repaint and put in new carpet.
Right, right.
And even if they do, they don't know necessarily what the right buyer's going to want.
I've always wondered about that. People say, well, you should redo your kitchen or your bathrooms and stuff. If I'm a buyer, I want to do what I want to do to the bathroom.
I agree 100%.
And right. So you look at these pictures, and so you could probably, have you had a client where they would create several different looks for one house?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Different styles for different types of buyers. You know, is it going to be a young buyer with a small kid? We'll show what a nursery would look like. If it's a, you know, older couple, we'll put an office in, an office setup.
And how often or how much is this software now used? I would imagine it's really growing.
It is, yeah. You'll see a little bit of it when you buy paints, like Sherwin-Williams does this on their website. For real estate, it really just started this summer. We were doing staging empty rooms, but doing the declutter and the repaint, it's taken off like crazy lately.
Well, you know what? It's really kind of an exciting thing, because why not? If you go in to look at a home, you know, you physically look at it, you see what's there, and then it seems like these photos can show you the possibilities.
Yeah, and for somebody who's thinking they're going to come in and refurnish or, you know, redo things anyway, this gives them some ideas.
Well, I would imagine, it could be used in decorating, right? If you want to go two or three different directions with a room, this would work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Should we do, you know, wood floors, tile floors, ceramic floors? Look at the photographs before you spend the
money. And so the next thing, Brian, really is we'll just be wearing goggles where we can change the room as we want to when we wake up.
That's really not too far off, Steve. You're right.
Brian Baldoff is here with VHT Studios. Where do people get other pictures of this?
So if you go to our website, vht.com, you'll see tons of samples of this, and we even have some 3D samples that you could see if you have your goggles.
That's a cool thing. So, I mean, you know, when the weather's bad and you don't want to go to your neighbor's open house, you can just go online and check it out this way.
There you go. Absolutely.
Nice to see you again.
Thanks, Steve. Same here.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WG.